Blog Talk Radio.
Greetings and Hotep. Welcome to the Care to Read Room. You've got your Omi Ink out live coming to you straight from my studio. I like to welcome each and every one of you by saying Habari Gani to my old friends and saying what's up to my new friends. Ladies and gentlemen, as you notice the billboard there, it reads spirituality. We've been somewhat busy trying to update our facility and giving you a little bit more information. So we will have that completed hopefully by tomorrow. But in the meantime, even though it reads spirituality, we are reading poetry for our youth. And we dedicated this week to reading poetry for our youth. Now, I'd like to say that we are going to have a guest on tomorrow to talk to you a little bit about what we had talked about earlier when I indicated to you that we are looking at startups and we are going to be featuring a startup business for our adults and our young adults, talking to them about online startup businesses. And we'll be starting to feature that starting tomorrow. And on Thursday, we will also continue with that discussion. This will be our last day for poetry reading for the youth. Now, I know most of the youth were out on vacation and they're probably going back to school, but we're going to finish this one up dealing with our young youth and our adults, dealing with conflicts, relationship, love, and conflicts. And that's something that we can all identify with. And I have a few poems that I'll be reading you from the African American literature, an anthology of nonfiction, fiction, poetry, and drama. And Demetria Worley and Jesse Perry Jr., forwarded by Nikki Giovanni. So I'd like to read for you from that particular book on conflicts and relationships. But before we start reading, let me just give you a little background information. Ladies and gentlemen, I am your advocate, the one who advocates for you. I am your advisor, the one who advises you as well. And I'd like to also be your relationship coach today to give you a little insight on what to do about relationships. This is for the younger youth, because I know that you need this information. The old heads might not need it, but if you do, come on in and take a seat. We're certainly inviting you to be a part of our discussion. And if you prefer to sit on the sideline and just type everything in, you're welcome to do that. We certainly encourage you to do that, because we know that some people cannot get into the room at this time, but you can come on demand and listen later. But our chat rooms are open. But why don't you lock that number in at 646-478-0270, and you can call in and give your opinion. We're talking about relationships and conflicts today. Now, where do you suppose we get this topic from? It's because these are the things that we go through as human beings. Relationships, love, and conflicts will arise if you stay together long enough. Now, I just want to give you just a brief discussion starter, and that would be on looking at relationships and what can we do to make relationships better. One thing we can do to make relationships better, we can improve our communication skills on every account. Most of our relationship problem comes from a misunderstanding. Not clearly understanding or reading the other person the wrong way, and misconstruing it altogether, causing you to have turmoil and better explain yourself. So if you better knew what to do in the communication area, it would cut down on so much conflict in the relationship. Now, I'd like to read to you something here from the chapter 6 on relationships, love, and conflict. And this is where the chapter is coming from, if you don't mind. Hold, please, while I try to get that set up for you. Relationships between men and women are often influenced by external forces from society. Some external forces can prevent people from having relationships. During the time of slavery, for example, African American men and women were not allowed to marry. Later, when they could marry, external forces such as racism and poverty could tear apart a relationship that otherwise might have survived. If people are consistently mistreated by society, sometimes they turn their frustrations against the people they have loved. Or if there is not enough money for the necessities of life, food, clothing, and shelter, people might separate from one another. In other words, they might part. In other words, not to be a burden on the other one and on those people that they might love. On the other hand, the same external forces that can tear apart relationship can also act as a driving force to unite two people. For example, during slavery, many slaves went against their owner's wishes and considered themselves married. Furthermore, many relationships have faced such negativity and such grief, and the negative forces as racism and poverty, many relationships have faced such negativity and forced them to separate. And the poverty is a common enemy that they are determined to destroy those situations and the survival mechanism. Now, ladies and gentlemen, I want you to marinate on that for a second, and we will be right back at you in the atmosphere.
Well, Mother is a message. Got to get the message to our brothers and sisters.
Mind. Surely we had tried, but we all lived right there in Africa.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, we're back. We wanted you to marinate on that discussion a little bit. Now let's just regroup a little bit. We're talking about relationship and conflict in the relationship. Now, you notice the reading that I just read from the American African-American literature book. It depicts exactly what's going on in the African-American race. And if we can reflect back on when our ancestors probably were going through slavery, some of the problems that they encountered, such as going against their master's will and still becoming wedded. At the same time, they were up against something called racism and discrimination. However, we have not gotten out of the woods ourselves. We are going through a different type of racism, and it's not exactly called the same racism that we would see in the past, but we're going through, some would call it a technicality of dealing with racial discrimination through technology means where you wouldn't necessarily see it. However, it's still there. It has not hit its ugly head. And those could be mechanisms that would prevent income salary for the family. And statistics will show that the average black family does not gross as much as the average white family. Statistics will also show that salaries for the black male are much different from the white male, and salaries for the black woman are a lot lower than the white female. So therefore, in having a discrimination with income, it can affect the relationship and cause turmoil in the family. Now, why would you say that, Omi? Because whenever there's not enough money, it could cause a major catastrophe, a bill not getting paid, someone becoming cross with the other person because they did not gross enough money to pay that bill that time it went on hold. It could cause a lot of trouble and frustration. Now, once again, these two people love each other, but because money comes in between them, it could cause a frustration. I know about this so well because it personally hits home with me, and I can explain to you from my perspective. When one person is working and carrying the load and doing everything, and if they expect somebody else to pick up the load and they don't carry their load, it could cause turmoil, even if you love someone. I know this personally. Now, here's what I want to draw your attention to. In this scenario, it was showing you that just because we make a few more dollars now and we've gotten in the boardroom, and we've gotten over things, and we're making decisions, and we're delegating, and we're up with the big league now. We think racism doesn't exist anymore, but it still does. You must understand that we're not talking about a racism that is blunt and out in the open. It could be behind closed doors when someone makes a decision to give increases and raises. You could be discriminated against through a raise and not know it. Now, if your economic status has not kept up with the Joneses, and you are light years behind them, and you can't maintain your household with the income you've gotten, it will cause turmoil in the relationship. You might not love John as much as you loved him 10 years ago when it didn't matter. Now, because you're trying to keep up with the Joneses and you want what the Joneses got, John may not look like a good provider because he's not able to bring in that X amount of dollars. Now, I want to say this to you. Firsthand, he can't stop loving John because all of a sudden the man decides not to give him an increase or there is not a salary increase across the board. You got to work with John, and you got to give him some time to try to set things straight so that he can bring in enough money so that you're not overburdening yourself. But at the same time, we must consider the outward experience that will be affecting inwardly relationships. So how is it that the man can be in your bedroom affecting your relationship? Easily. If John didn't get that little raise and you were planning on allowing John to spend some personal time with you and you're so upset about arguing over that money that John didn't bring in, guess what? You're not going to be taking John up to the bedroom tonight. And you and John will be quarreling, and your backs will probably be turned to each other. And that's how much it can affect you. Now, it's very good to pick up books and read it. It's very good. Let me see where I left off at. Let me see if I can pick up some information here. It says, as we go on, in addition to external forces, internal forces such as how men and women feel about themselves can affect a relationship. If people do not have a strong sense of themselves as an individual, the relationship can fail and fall apart if one person is called upon to put the other person's welfare first. On the other hand, if the people in a relationship are confident about themselves as an individual, they can use this strong strength to help their relationship survive. In African-American writers' stories and poems in this chapter, writers illustrate the pain that racism, poverty, and ignorance can cause in a relationship. Also, they show the joy that pride and dignity can contribute to that same relationship. And it goes on to say that pride and ignorance. Now, where are we with the pride? I would imagine the self-esteem, feeling good about oneself, being able to inspire yourself. Now, let me speak on that. Most people in relationship want a counterpart that they don't have to do a lot to inspire. They pretty much want you to be able to uplift your own self. Do you not know that the hardest thing in the world to do is to inspire another human being? It takes all your faculties and energy to uplift someone. A man once told me, I want a relationship where I don't have to spend a lot of time inspiring you to lift your own self up. I don't want the responsibility of having to lift your confidence up and inspire you. He was so right. I once tried to lift someone's confidence up and inspire them. I found myself being drugged down in the miry clay myself, and I was exhausted. And I'm sure you are too if you have to use all of your energy to inspire someone to lift them up. You want the person to have pride in themselves and to already have the ability to lift themselves up. That could take away from the relationship. Where does the conflict come in? The conflict will come when the person thought that they were satisfying you and they were enough to keep you happy. But it turned out that that other person's internal esteem was not lifted and they were counting on you to lift them up. But can you stay on the up and up all the time where you're using all of your energy to lift someone? No. Each man and woman must lift their own selves up. They must be able to pour over into somebody else's life and not depend on you to just lift them up all the time. So, ladies and gentlemen, when we're talking about relationships, we have to know that external forces can affect our relationships. And I want to also say to you young people, sometimes you don't know what relationships are for. And they don't necessarily have to make you happy, but you could be creating a communal effort together as one. Two heads are always better than one, but you have to know what the relationship is going to be good for, and you have to know why you're coming together and what interests you have. So, talking about the wife of his youth, and what we were just talking about was the wife of his youth. And looking at the wife of his youth, let's take a look at the wife of his youth and see what he has to say. And this is entitled The Wife of His Youth by Charles Chestnut. Mr. Ryder was going to give a ball. There were several reasons why this was an opportune time for such an event. Mr. Ryder might be applicable to apply and be called the Dean of the Blue Veins. And the original Blue Veins were a little society of colored people organized in a certain northern city shortly after the war. Its purpose was to establish and maintain correct social standards among a people whose social condition presented almost unlimited room for improvement. By accident, combined perhaps with the natural affiliates, and the society consists of individuals who were generally speaking were whiter than black. Some of these outsiders made the suggestion that no one was eligible for membership who was not white enough to show blue veins. The suggestion was readily adopted by those who were not of the favored few. And since that time, the society thought possessing a longer and more pretentious name had been known far and wide as the Blue Vein Society and its members as the Blue Vein. The Blue Vein did not allow that any such requirements existed for admission to their circle, but on the contrary, declared that character and culture was the only thing considered, and that if not, that if most of their members were light-colored, it was because such persons, as a rule, had better opportunities to qualify themselves for membership. Opinion differed, and it differed all over, too, as to the usefulness of the society. There were those who had been known as assailed and voluntarily as a glaring example of the very prejudice from which the colors on the other side. They had been headed as to maintain with zeal and eagerness that by the days of the fire and by night on a guide, to guide the people through the social wilderness. And while there was really no such requirement, it is doubtfully true that very few, and that they were one of two of the older members who had come up from South and from slavery, and their history presented enough romantic circumstances to rob their survival origin of the guest aspect. Now, let me try to break this all down. The Blue Veins, this is talking about the wife of his youth. Who are the Blue Veins? They said, if your veins did not show up and were not blue enough to show up, then you were not light enough to be a part of this group. And this was a group just coming up from slavery now, mind you, with their sadity ways and looking for high yellow folks to enroll in their membership. Now, how racist can we be as a people when we start having a caste system among our own black people, judging them the same way we would judge by the lighter you are, like the old saying goes, if you're brown, stick around. If you're yellow, you're mellow. If you're black, get back. And we know how the thing goes. And here we are as adults are still perpetrating the Willie Lynch theory in the 21st century, carrying that over with nonsense of people who could join a society that had to be able to show blue veins in their color. Now, this isn't a racism remark that is imposed upon our own people by our own people. So how do we deal with that when we've got this going on in our own society? We've got to deal with it straightforward. We've got to let people know you cannot carry these old stigmatism or these old stigmas that you've gotten from the Willie Lynch theory to the 21st century. You can no longer carry those and perpetuate them on your own black people. Now, here's a form of distortion and problems that could be created in a community. And I think what this book is trying to say is that we've got to address these problems amongst our own community as well. And we have to point out the inadequacies. Now, what does that have to do with relationship? It has a lot to do with relationship. Because if you don't feel good about yourself, and if your season is not in, and if yellow and light-skinned people is not in, you'll probably be feeling less healthy about yourself and feeling inadequate. And if dark folks are in style or in season, then I would imagine that they would be feeling high esteem. No matter what the shade is, light-skinned, high yellow, or fair brother or sister, or dark-skinned, blue-black, you should form your self-esteem from the things that you have aspired to do in your life and have been successful to do them, not on your exterior forces once again. Because some people are not pleased and happy with their exterior forces, and most people had nothing to do with their exterior forces. They were by default giving these through their lineage and their upbringing. So you really cannot pay tribute to any of your exterior skin tone. But yet you find this society going on and perpetuating heresy, partiality, and racism amongst their own people in the 21st century. So what do we do as a black people? We address that. And we talk about that because we find that in society so often, in sororities. Just for example, you'll find sororities that will only recruit the blue vein sisters. Only. And you don't have to ask me about it because I've seen it firsthand. We've got to stop the confusion. We've really got to stop the chaos and the prejudice and partiality amongst ourselves. Let's get back to relationships again. I like that chapter because the relationships is something that youth need to talk about. Now, youth, I want to say something to you. Nowadays, you are not getting married as frequently as in the past that us baby boomers used to get married. You're not making preparations for a woman to go out and to mesmerize, to court. And it's very important that you should have that on your agenda. And it's not that you won't live past 25. You got to see yourself living past 25 and being able to court a young lady and marry a young lady. It's very important that you should get relationships right. And we have so much turmoil going on right now where this one doesn't like that one and that one doesn't like this one, that we don't see as much lovemaking. We see a lot of babies being made, but no one having the ideal relationship where they're truly in love. I like to see more youth who will demonstrate having a love affair that you can write about, one that will be a monumental love affair and not one where they're just bedding a woman, producing children out of wedlock, and these children are going fatherless. I like to see more relationships understood, where most people try real hard to develop their listening skills. And sometimes we even have to take a class in learning how to listen. So, you know, we can best understand someone by how well we listen. And I would like to say that African Americans are going to have to spend more time in literary reading about the way we were, the way we used to be, and how much we've changed, and how some of those old-fashioned ways we can adapt and acquire them again and use them because they're successful. But it's very important for us to know that. Now, I have one other reading to give you, and that's by Nikki Giovanni. And I'm going to give you a little history about Nikki Giovanni. She's one of my favorites. And I did get a chance to meet her in person and get an autograph from her. Nikki Giovanni, born in 1943. And she was born to Yolanda. She was born as the name Yolanda Cornelli Giovanni Jr. in Knoxville, Tennessee, to August Giovanni, a social worker, and Yolanda Giovanni, a supervisor for the welfare department. A strong influence in Giovanni's life was the material grandmother, Luvania Terrell Watson. Giovanni lived with her grandmother during her sophomore year as a junior in high school. Her grandmother instilled in her a responsibility for other African Americans. While attending Fitz University, Giovanni edited Eric's in the campus literary magazine, participated in the Fitz Writers Workshops under the direction of the author John O. Kelly, and became politically active in 1964. In 1964, she founded a chapter of the Students' Nonviolence Coordinating Commencement. This was a civil rights organization on the Fitz campus. Giovanni graduated magna cum laude with an honor in history in 1967. For a short time, Giovanni attended graduate school at the University of Pennsylvania School of Social Work and the School of Fine Arts at Columbia University. During this time, Giovanni was active in a number of arts and cultural programs in African American communities. Her experience developed in the area first in poetry collection, Black Feeling, Black Talk, and Black Judgment in 1968. These two volumes brought Giovanni national attention in 1968. She received a National Foundation for the Arts grant and began her university teaching career. She has taught at Queens College, Rutgers University, and Livingston College. Currently, she teaches at Virginia Presbyterian State University, with Haka Miyabuchi, Don L. Lee, and Sonia Sanchez. Giovanni has been recognized as one of the three leading figures in Black poetry between 1968 and 1971, due in part to her international travel in the middle 1970s and 1980s. Her work was moved from Black nationalist towards a more humanitarian. And Giovanni has published poetry collections, dialogues, and anthologies, and essays, including all sorts of writing under the Black Song poems for children as well, and My House poems, and a dialogue she did. Now, Giovanni has done a lot of things, and some of her poems that we love so well and read, we can find them all over the place. And I like to read this from Nikki Giovanni, Nikki Rosa. Childhood remembrances are always a drag. If you are Black, you always remember things like living in Woolocks with no inside toilets. And if you become famous for something, they never talk about how happy you were to have your mother all to yourself and how good the water felt when you got your bath from one of those big tubs, and that folks in Chicago, barbers, and somehow when you talk about home and never get across how much you understood their feeling. As the whole family attends meetings about holidays, and even though you remember your biography never understands your father's pain as he sells his stocks, and mother dreams Mother Dream goes, and through you a poor is poverty. It is your father drinking that makes any difference, but only that everybody is together. You and your sisters have happy birthdays and very good Christmases, and I really hope no white person ever has cause to write about no, because they never understand black love. It's black wealth, and they are probably talking about my hard childhood and never understand that all the while I was quite happy. Let me say something about that. That is so true. Everybody is not a victim of living across the tracks and living on the other side, being a part of statistics and being a black person struggling to come up. And I, for one, like to speak on that as being from a large family of a great number. I cherish my childhood and the fact that I came up not poor, not living in the ghetto, but living in a home, raised in a house. I felt myself to be rich in all manners of ways. I felt myself to be able to talk from a perspective of a family that was a nuclear family that extended itself beyond the nuclear family. It's very important to know that we tell other people that are not black that we can be happy with our dysfunctional families and still be fortunate to have grown up in that environment, because much pain might have caused us to develop much character and also causing us to aspire to be a little better, but to value our lifestyles and the way we were raised. Every family does not have to have two-parent households to make it a good family. That is not the formula to only make you a good child that's reared in a good family. But it's very important to have good character, and if a mother can instill character in a child, and if she doesn't have that extra perspective of a husband at home, she still can do a good job. Now, what goes on behind closed doors in a black family is very important. You must understand, us people who are African-American, we've got our foundation from Africa. We know what the purpose of a family is, and we know the purpose of a child. It is not to satisfy the adults or to be used for titillation. That child has a purpose in the family, and the child is the most important person in an African-American family. So that child is not what you always see across the television screen, mutilated and beaten and abused. Black people don't have that type of desire to hurt a child. They will take in someone else's child to rear. They have love for children, and they know children were put here for a special reason, not to serve them and not to titillate them. We were the first people with foundations for child development. We were still socializing some people who were in caves at one time who did not have any purpose for children or did not know the purpose for children. So we are not fallible people who are broken and who are haphazardly living this life. We have a program. We have a structured program that comes from our Africans. And everyone has spun off from the foundation that Africans have created to develop their socialization skills for their family and the hierarchy needs. And I will say that Africans know so much about this. That's why you see their babies strapped to their back and not set in the corner in front of a television set, because they know that flesh and blood must bond to flesh and blood. So before you go feeling sorry for the African-American family and how we were reared, think twice that we've had the best of most worlds, and we know the benefit of a child, and we know the purpose of the child and the family structure. So it is those who have used their child for extensions of their satisfaction and their gratification who have misused their children and who have not bonded with them, and they do not bond their children with flesh and blood, that I would cry for. So don't cry for me and our African race. Praise what you see come out of the African family. This new breed of young people who are not accustomed to rearing children and who don't have the foundation, they must be taught as well. That is not the traditional way that Africans raise African children. We know much better that the new generation has to be trained. So please do not look at that generation as the foundation for African Americans. And on the media, the people that we have set up front to be our role models, they're not all of our role models. We can choose and select our role models on our own. Some of those people are flawed and damaged and have no business demonstrating our role models. I'd like to thank you on that note. And you've been listening to Maddie Harvey's Baby Sister. And I'd like to say that this session can be listened to on demand. And we'll be right back at you tomorrow. Tomorrow we have a couple of guests coming on talking about startup. This has been the conclusion of our poetry reading and our story time session for the youth and for some of the young children. I hope you will sit down and listen to it and will value it, because we're talking about upgrading ourselves. We're talking about now that the 21st century has come in, our minds are being upgraded. In order for us to be around for eternity, we've got to upgrade our minds and be a part of this new millennium where we have the age of Aquarius. And now that our age of Aquarius has been ushered in, we've got to have a mind change and a mindset to clarify what it is we believe in, what we stand for, and what it is humanity will require of us. So stay tuned tomorrow. We'll see you tomorrow at 2:30, well, 3:30. So please come and join us tomorrow and be a part of our world. We'd love to have you. And this is the end feature of our storytelling. But tomorrow we start with startup and starting your own business and how you can become an entrepreneur. Please join us.
Mother is a message. Got to get the message to our brothers and sisters.
Never stand alone.